I always appreciate the opportunity to be able to, for y'all to allow me to try to preach the gospel, to teach what I believe the Bible teaches on any particular topic. My job would be to teach the truth, to warn yourself and myself about things that we might need to be doing to be faithful Christians. Your job would be to be like the Bereans in Acts 17, verse 11, to search out, see if what I'm saying is so. Look, if I don't prove what I'm saying by the Bible, just let it go through one ear and out the other, okay? But if what I'm saying, I ask you to consider what I have to say, and if it is proven by God's Word, then please consider it with an open heart and put it into practice in your life if you find it to be the truth, if you find it to be what God says. What I'd like to talk about this morning, I entitled the lesson, Partaking of Other Men's Sins. We see that phrase pretty much in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 22, if you'd like to turn there. 1 Timothy 5, verse 22. Josh, why don't you read that for us, 1 Timothy 5, 22.
Lay hands suddenly on no man, neither be partaker of other men's sins. Keep thyself pure.
So there's my phrase. We should not be a partaker of other men's sins. Notice it's talking about not my sin, but another man's sins. So most, and rightfully so, most of what we talk about is how should I avoid sin, okay? There are some verses, though, that talk about what about if somebody else is sinning, then what should I do? It's not talking about my sin in particular, but how should I approach somebody else who's sinning? This is one of those verses, and this is what I want to talk about this morning. Probably the most famous verse, the one, I guess you'd say, I say famous, the one we're most familiar with, is 2 John verses 10 and 11. You'll remember verse 9, it said we're to abide in the teaching, the doctrine of Christ. If we don't, we don't have God, we can't be saved. Seth, read for me 2 John verses 10 and 11.
If anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, do not receive him into your house, nor greet him. For he who greets him shares in his evil deeds.
And mine has, is he that biddeth him Godspeed is partaker of his evil deeds. We're all, I'm sure, familiar with this passage. Verse 9 is saying, Pat, you have to abide in the teaching of Christ. Sin is a transgression of the law. You need to go within God's law. But suppose somebody else, it's not me, but somebody else, how do I approach that? I'm not to bid them Godspeed, because if I do, I share in their evil deeds. I become a partaker in their evil deeds. Now, to me, I can think of at least two ways we could share or partake in their evil deeds, or bid them Godspeed, I should say. If we help them sin, now remember, it's not me that's sinning directly, but if I help them sin, or I encourage them in their sin. You follow what I'm saying? That's bidding them Godspeed. I become a partaker in their evil deeds, even if I didn't directly commit the sin myself. You see my point? Let's look at quickly at some other verses in the Bible that teach this same concept. Mr. Waddle, would you like to read? Bill, you want to read? Revelation 18, verse 4. Revelation 18, verse 4. Everybody read along with him. Revelation 18, verse 4.
And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye may not partake of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plague.
Do you see how it's possible to become a partaker in somebody else's sins? Eugene, how about Ephesians 5, 6 through 7? Ephesians 5, 6 through 7.
Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things the wrath of God cometh. The wrath of God cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them.
See how we're not supposed to be a partaker. We're not supposed to share in their sin. And then, John, how about verse 11 of the same chapter, Ephesians 5, 11.
And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them.
The word fellowship is really the same word as partaker in the Greek, if I understand it correctly. Saying the same thing. Don't be a partaker with them. Have no fellowship in the unfruitful works of darkness. Again, we're talking about somebody else who's sinning directly. We're not committing the sin directly. I say directly because, as you see, I'm pointing out that we are sinning because they're committing a sin, and we're either helping them commit that sin, even though we're not doing it ourselves, or we're encouraging them in that sin. Mark, how about read for us Psalms 50, verse 18. Psalms 50, verse 18. So here could be a thief or an adulterer. We could consent with the thief. Maybe we didn't steal it ourselves, but we consented with it. We showed approval for it. We went along with it. Or we became a partaker with adulterers. Maybe we didn't commit the adultery ourselves, but we in some way became a partaker. How about Luke 23, 50 through 51? You see, there's a lot of passages that talk about this. Shows that we need to be careful in what we're doing. Maybe sometimes we don't think about this as much as we ought. Luke 23, verse 50 and 51 says, "And behold, there was a man named Joseph, a counselor, and he was a good man and a just. The same had not consented to the counsel and deed of them." I'll stop right there. Now, that's he's spoken of as in a, being a good light, that he did not consent to the counsel and deed of them. See, he was doing what he's supposed to do. Not only was he not performing the act, he was not consenting with those who were performing this wicked or evil act. Here in my outline at this point, I have, it looks like, six ways, and there may be more, that we can partake in another sin. And I actually got this from a book called Fellowship with God and His People by Samuel Dawson, actually a long time ago. Number one, we could commit the same sin together. That's a way we could be a partaker in other men's sins. That's pretty obvious, and I'm not focusing on this so much today. But notice we can see that in the case of Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5. In Acts 5, 1 and 2, "But a certain man named Ananias with Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being privy to it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet." Skip down to verse 9. It says, "Then Peter said to her, How is it that ye have agreed together to tempt the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of them which have buried thy husband are at the door and shall carry thee out." Remember, their problem was not how much they gave. The problem was what they said about what they gave. They lied about it. Not only did she know about what her husband did, Sapphira also lied about it. So she was a partaker in her husband's evil deed in that she committed the same sin. Okay, I think that's pretty obvious. We talked about, Mark read about in Psalms about consenting with a thief. What about what Saul was doing in Acts 8, verse 1? Turn to Acts 7:59 just to set the stage. It says, "And they stoned Stephen, calling upon God and saying, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit." So just read that to show what's going on here. We already know that. They're stoning Stephen because he's preaching the truth to them. But what does it say about Saul in Acts 8, verse 1? "And Saul was consenting unto his death." You see, Saul probably didn't throw a stone. It seems to indicate he probably didn't. I guess I can't say that for sure. The problem he did is he was consenting unto the stoning. He was consenting unto Stephen's death. So did he literally commit the sin of stoning himself? I think probably not. But he committed the sin, I'll call it indirectly, and that he consented. He went along with it. He agreed with it. Perhaps he encouraged it. We know later, of course, that he was persecuting Christians, so he did the very same thing that they were doing with Stephen, at least later. How about this one? We can become a partaker in another person's sin if we don't warn others about their sin, like we all, as we have opportunity. You know, one of my favorite passages that brings this out is Ezekiel chapter 3, verse 18. Ezekiel 3, verse 18. "When I say unto the wicked, Thou shalt surely die, and thou givest him not warning, nor speakest to warn the wicked from his wicked way to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity. But watch this. But his blood will I require at thine hand. You see that? Here's a man that we know is in sin. And we have an opportunity, perhaps some obligation that we ought to be telling him. But we don't. He's going to die in his sin. He's responsible for his own sin. But his blood is going to be required at our hand. You see, we didn't commit the sin directly ourselves, but we did not warn like we ought to, so we became a partaker. I think we can see the same point from Acts, what Paul said, in Acts 20, verse 20, and then 26 and 27. Josh, why don't you read for us Acts 20, verse 20 to start with.
And how I kept back nothing that was profitable unto you, but have showed you and have taught you publicly and from house to house.
So he taught, he did not keep anything back from them that was profitable. You know, we say, well, that's the preacher's job. Do preachers really do that? I'm talking about gospel preachers. Do they really not hold back? Or is it possible sometimes they have a temptation to only preach what the congregation already accepts? And then when they do that, because they won't cause any controversy, when they do that, they become a partaker because they're not warning like they ought to, Ezekiel 3:18. Josh 3:26 and 27.
Wherefore, I take you to record this day that I am pure from the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare unto you all the gospel of God.
So Paul was only pure from the blood of all men. That reminds me exactly of Ezekiel 3:18. Their blood will be on our hands. If he preached all the counsel, that means we need to preach everything our audience agrees with, if it's the truth, and other things that they don't agree with. For example, if you were preaching in the Baptist church, you could preach the truth that you got to believe in Jesus all day long and nobody would ever say anything. If you're preaching at a Church of Christ, you could preach all day long, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, and you'll never have a problem. Is that the truth? It certainly is, and we ought to preach it. But there are other things that ought to be preached that the audience might not agree with. We have to preach those things too, because if we don't, we're not warning as we ought. That's what we see from Ezekiel 3 and from Acts chapter 20. How about we can become a partaker in other people's sins by our example and influence? 1 Corinthians 8. Seth, read 1 Corinthians 8, verses 10 through 12. We're familiar with this. This is when we understand, for example, that it's okay to eat this meat, but we refrain from doing it because another person who thinks it is wrong, he, by eating the meat in front of him, you might encourage him to eat the meat, violate his conscience, and that would be a sin for him.
Or if anyone sees you without knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? And because of your knowledge shall the weak both perish for whom Christ died. But when you thus sin against the brother, and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ.
You see, it's the other brother that thinks it's wrong, but it's not really wrong. You eat in front of him, that encourages him. King James says it emboldens him. I like that word. It causes him to be bold enough to go ahead and eat it when he thinks it's wrong. When he does that, he violates his conscience. He sins, but verse 12 says, when we do that, we sin against the brethren. And we sin against Christ when we do that. We become a partaker in their evil deeds, their violation of their conscience, because we help cause it. Well, bringing that up, how about that? Don't we become a partaker in somebody else's sin if we cause them to sin? Eugene, how about Matthew 5:32? Matthew 5:32.
But I say to you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced,
well, I think this what this is saying, and to me it's pretty obvious, that if I divorce Carol for, say, burning the biscuits, I put her into a place of undeserved sexual temptation, so that if she goes out and succumbs to that temptation, and she didn't deserve to be tempted that way because I had no right to divorce her, she succumbs. Of course, she's responsible for that sin, but I caused it. So I also become a partaker in it. Do you see what I'm saying? Matthew 5:32. And then the last one on Mr. Dawson's list, you could become a partaker in other people's evil deeds by financially supporting error. Well, I'm turning to Philippians chapter 4, verse 15. Philippians 4:15. We're going to see just a verse here that talks about churches supporting Paul financially. It says, "Now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only." So churches not only have a right to, they ought to support faithful gospel preachers. But if they support somebody who's a false teacher, I'll just bring up an extreme case. A preacher who's supposed to be a faithful gospel preacher, and he starts saying that the Bible authorizes gay marriage and starts performing wedding ceremonies for the gay. Well, you'd want to cut off that support. If you didn't, if you kept on financially supporting him, you'd be doing what Ephesians 5:11, I believe John read that for us, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness." We'd be violating that passage. We would be having fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. We would become a partaker in that preacher's evil deeds just by continuing to financially support him. You see my point? Okay, now, we've looked at the basis for what I'm trying to get at. Here are some verses that talk about this point, many verses, that not only is it it's wrong for me to commit a sin, but it's also wrong for me to partake in somebody else's sin. We've talked about the different ways we might do that. At this point in this lesson, I'd like to give you some examples for you to consider, for you to think about, consider in your life and in mine, whether or not we may be doing this. We might be violating this principle we see all throughout the Bible. Start with some obvious ones. How about Ephesians 4:28, which says, "Let him that stole steal no more." Now, this is an obvious one. Suppose, and I use this in my personal work Bible studies all the time, suppose four guys are going to rob a bank. One of them's assignment is to be the getaway car driver. He doesn't even have a gun, but he stays out in the car with the engine running. The other three go in and rob the bank with guns and come out, and he drives them away. If they catch all four of them, Seth, how many would they convict of armed robbery?
Four.
Yeah, one we say is an accomplice to the crime. Well, it's the same way with sin. We see that from 2 John verses 10 and 11. If you bid them Godspeed, you become a partaker in their evil deeds. You become an accomplice to sin. And so we can see that. Even though the guy never touched the gun, didn't go in the bank, he's guilty of partaking in their sin of robbing the bank because he helped them do it. You see that? They'll convict him of armed robbery even though he never touched the gun. Okay? How about in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9, the Bible condemns there, and this is something everybody already knows, 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9, the Bible condemns fornicators there. So another illustration I use to make this point in some of my personal work studies is that if I were to say somebody's at work, his car's in the shop getting fixed, and the mechanic calls and said it's done, he says, "Pat, can you give me a ride to the mechanic shop on the way home from work so I can pick up my car?" And I do that. Is that a good deed or a bad deed? It'd be a good deed. Suppose, on the other hand, somebody at work says, "Pat, on the way home, can you give me a ride down to this hotel?" And it's a shady hotel, and I know for a fact he's going down there to meet up with a prostitute. Well, you see, I'm doing almost exactly the same thing physically. I'm giving him a ride somewhere. But in the first case, it was a good deed, and we would all agree this is a bad deed. So even if I drove him down there and went straight home to my wife, I didn't commit fornication myself, I helped him commit fornication, because I knew what he was doing. So I became a partaker in his evil deeds. That's obvious, isn't it? That would be wrong. John, read for us Romans 1, 26 and 27. This is another obvious one, I think.
God gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burning their lust for one another, man with man committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty for their error which was due.
One of many passages which condemns homosexuality. I believe all of us here aren't even tempted by this abominable sin. Not even tempted by it. But suppose you're thinking about, you might want to decide, you're new into town, you're thinking about where you want to go to church regular, be a member there and help, and not just to visit, you know. And the closest church is a gay church. Perhaps you're moving in over on Sparkman Drive in Huntsville. At least there used to be a gay church there. And you're thinking about where you're going to go to church regular, be a member, contribute, help them in what they're doing. And you think, well, it's only 2 minutes away to go to that gay church. And I don't care anything about that. I'm straight. But I think I might want to go there just because it's close. Do you think God would want you to attend there? Or do you think he might want you to drive a little further away to find a church that's faithfully following God's word? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Even though I wouldn't be committing the sin myself per se, if I went there as a regular member helping them, then I would be, in effect, telling them that their lifestyle was okay. I would become I'd be encouraging them in their sin and become a partaker in their evil deeds, wouldn't I? Bill, why don't you read for us Matthew 15, verse 9, and then 14. Matthew 15, verse 9 and 14, and verse 14. Right.
But in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men.
And then verse 14.
Verse 14, let them alone. They be blind leaders of the blind, and if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch.
We know then that false teachers, that is wrong. False teaching is wrong. We don't want to teach. We want to teach the truth. We see that from these two verses and many others. But the principle we're talking about this morning is why most of us won't give to the Salvation Army. You know, at work, they always want donations for the Salvation Army or the United Way. But if we do that, then our money is going to be going for false teaching. So we don't do that. We won't be teaching something false ourselves, but by donating to that cause, we'll be aiding them in what they're doing and become a partaker in their evil deeds. Mark, read for us Matthew 19, verse 9.
Matthew 19,
verse 9. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery.
So we're scripturally married, but say we have a first cousin who's going to get married. Maybe they're not even Christians. But either my first cousin or the lady he's marrying had been married before and there wasn't a scriptural divorce there. Are we going to attend the wedding? We're not directly violating this passage, Matthew 19, 9, if we do, because we're not committing adultery. We're in a scriptural marriage. But when we attend that wedding, we're putting our blessing upon an unscriptural, an adulterous marriage. That's why I wouldn't attend a wedding like that. If it's an unscriptural marriage, I don't go. Don't even think about going. Even if it's a non-Christian, we must not become a partaker in their evil deeds. Everybody turn to Romans chapter 12, verse 19. Romans 12, verse 19. Now, just for a moment, I want to talk about being a conscientious objector. Not being willing to kill for our country because we believe the Bible teaches we shouldn't and we ought to obey God rather than men. Probably most of us here, I'm not sure all of us, but most of us here are conscientious objectors. Let's think about that for a moment. Romans 12 verse 19 says, "Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord." This, along with I would say at least 8 or 10 or 12 other passages, I think, teach that we should be a conscientious objector. We should not kill for our country. Okay? I think most of you here would agree with that. Now, I want to take that agreement that we have and then make an application based upon what we're talking about this morning. In North Alabama, we have a lot of conscientious objectors, and I am one of them, so I agree with that, compared to most other places in the country. But guess what? About one-third of the employment in Huntsville is defense-related. Yet most of those conscientious objectors who say it's wrong to kill for your government will perhaps be an engineer or some other function where they help design the weapons that kill people. That's totally inconsistent to me. If it's wrong to kill somebody for your country, it's wrong to help design the weapon that kills for your country. Now, that's pretty easy. I'm going to be a conscientious objector. That's pretty safe. That way I won't have to go overseas and the possibility of getting shot at. It's easy to make that decision because, well, that keeps me safe. But if you really believe it, if you're not just doing it so that you won't get fired at, if you really believe it because the Bible teaches it, then you also wouldn't take a job helping design missiles that kill people. But people do, perhaps because they're not going to get fired at if they do that. Think about this. You're part of the army, and we say, I'm not going to fire the gun that might kill somebody. Say the big gun that you see on TV sometimes, a big old gun, they're shooting a gun. But could you be the person that loaded it, as long as you weren't the one that pushed the button to make it fire? But, you know, they usually have two guys there, one that loads this big gun, and the other hits fire. Go. Shoot. Would it be all right to load it, but not to shoot it? That didn't seem right, does it? No, it wouldn't be right because, okay, say he's the one that killed the person when that bomb that they shot hit somebody. He's the one that did it, the one that hit the button. But you helped him by loading the gun. I think this is obvious. You became a partaker in his evil deeds. Let me give you another illustration. And I didn't think of this until on the internet 2 or 3 years ago. I saw a picture on the internet of a device. Okay, and it was the person was making a good point on Facebook against abortion. And what this picture I saw was looked like a very complicated pair of scissors. It wasn't used for cutting paper though. But there was no motor in it or anything like that. It was all powered by the hand of the doctor. But it was very complicated and it was used to perform abortions. But when I say complicated, it was designed by an engineer, no doubt about it. So we all understand it's wrong to kill those little innocent babies that aren't born yet, right? That's abortion. But would it be right to be the engineer who designed that complicated device that's only used for one reason, by doctors performing abortions? Can't we see that would be wrong to engineer that device? If it's wrong to do that, why wouldn't it be wrong to engineer the missile that goes and blows up and kills people, our national enemies? Why wouldn't it be? Be the same principle, wouldn't it? Turn to 1 Kings 11, and let's read 6 through 11. 1 Kings 11, verses 6 through 11. It says, and Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord, as did David his father. Then did Solomon build an high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Moloch, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And likewise did he for all his strange wives, which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon, because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice, and he commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods, but he kept not that which the Lord commanded. Wherefore the Lord said to Solomon, forasmuch as this is done of thee, and thou hast not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded thee, I will surely rend the kingdom from thee and will give to thy servant. Now I may misunderstand this passage, because a lot of times I do misunderstand Old Testament passages. But if I understand it correctly, this is not saying that Solomon sacrificed the idols to himself, or sacrificed to the idols himself, but that he built the high places so that his wives could sacrifice to the idols. See that in verse 8? Now, supposing I'm right, he did not sacrifice to the idols himself, but he built the high places so his wives could do it. These foreign wives, the ones that worshiped idols. Did he do wrong? Well, evidently he did. You see, he didn't commit the sin himself per se, but he helped somebody else commit a sin, commit the sin of idolatry. Do you see that? Now, do you see the parallel to building a bomb, to engineering, designing, or aiding and building the missile or the bomb that kills people? If you're a conscientious objector, and if you're not, we don't have time to talk about and try to prove to you that you need to be. So you can just sort of ignore this part of the lesson. If you're a conscientious objector, if it's wrong to pull the trigger to shoot that missile or to blow up the bomb, then from the principles we've talked about this morning, all these verses that say you can't help somebody sin, you can't encourage somebody in your sin, you can't be a partaker in other sins, you can't bid them Godspeed, can't we see that designing that bomb or missile is violating that principle? You're helping somebody else shoot somebody or blow up somebody. And so you become a partaker in their evil deeds. Like I say, we have all kinds of Christians who are conscientious objectors in North Alabama working these kind of defense jobs. It just doesn't match up with the Bible, what the Bible teaches. Miss Carol and Melanie are here. Brent Ciotta, when I first met him, he worked at the drugstore. Rexall, I can't remember the name of it, but he worked there, but he would not sell or stock tobacco products. Y'all remember that? He worked at the drugstore there in Athens. I guess Brent was in college at the time. But he told them, I'm going to work here, but they had cigarettes and stuff, but I will not sell. And I assume he worked the cash register some, and he also stocked the products. He would not sell or stock the tobacco products. You see, he understood this principle. Richard Petty, you remember the famous race car driver? He told his mother that he would never put a beer ad on his race car. A lot of those race cars have beer ads on them, right? But Richard Petty told his mother he'd never do that. He evidently had a good mother. I don't know if he stuck with that, but you see the point? His mother understood the point. If it's wrong to get drunk, then it's wrong to advertise the beer so that people can get drunk. Dwight McGee, he's a friend of mine who worships over Elgin Hills, over toward Florence. Some of you may know him. He's a school teacher. And I remember when I was in high school, we would have assemblies for pep rallies, maybe on the Friday during the day of a big game that night. Dwight refuses to take his class to the pep rally because of the lascivious movements of the cheerleaders. Dwight's thinking, isn't he? He believes the cheerleaders are not dressed modestly, and so he's not going to be a partaker in it by showing approval for it, by encouraging his students to go look at it. Thinking about that, turn to 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10, which talks about modesty. 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. So along the lines of Dwight's point, if it's wrong to dress immodestly, wouldn't it be wrong to pay and attend a sporting event where the people you're going to see, the participants, the players in the game are dressed immodestly? Possibly basketball, volleyball. If it's wrong to do that, we don't go to the beach because all the girls are in bikinis. We shouldn't go to the basketball or the volleyball game if the girls are dressed immodestly there. Have a friend in the Albertville area, Bill Wilson, one time, he drove a truck that would supply grocery stores. And he asked me about the propriety of driving a grocery delivery truck that had wine and beer in it. You see, Bill understood this point. He's asking me what I thought about that. You know, this occurred, me thinking about this particular point I'm about to get to. Turn to Galatians 5:19. Early on, after I first got out of college, I started investing money in stock market, but mutual funds. A mutual fund is where you don't invest in one particular stock because that's kind of risky. What if the bottom falls out? You invest in a mutual fund where these guys who are supposed to know what they're doing, they might say, okay, we're going to invest in 500 different stocks. And we'll pick out the ones you just invest your money in. We'll do it that way. Well, the first one I did that way was called Fidelity Magellan. And then my brother, my physical brother in the flesh, pointed out to me, did you see on the list of those 500 companies that Magellan invests in, he had Coors and Playboy? You see, I didn't want to invest in Coors and Playboy and try to make money off their profits. So I got out of Magellan, out of that. You see, even investing in the stock market and mutual funds, you can become a partaker in other people's evil deeds if you're, in effect, investing in companies like Coors Beer and Playboy Magazine. Acts chapter 18. And I see we've run out of time. I had a whole other section in this sermon about entertainment, about music, TV, movies, and so forth, but I'm not going to have time to get to that. Maybe some other time. Acts 18, verses 5 and 6. It says, and when Silas and Timotheus were come from Macedonia, Paul was pressed in the spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus was Christ. And when they opposed themselves and blasphemed, he shook his raiment and said unto them, your blood be upon your own heads, I am clean. From henceforth I will go into the Gentiles. This is kind of like Ezekiel 3:18 in warning. So Paul is preaching to these people. They don't accept it. And he said, well, now your blood's not upon me, it's upon your own heads. Because I preach to you like I ought to. And think about this in relation to a sermon I preached here a few months back, personal evangelism. What you can see from this passage. If we don't get out and try to teach the lost like we ought to, then their blood will be required. Their blood will be upon our heads. It doesn't matter how many times you get baptized or how many times you go to church. If you don't get out and do personal evangelism, you're not doing what the Lord expects of you. You're not trying. If we don't do it, then this passage implies that their blood will be upon our heads. You see? It's the same principles we've been talking about. Okay, it's about time to stop. Perhaps you can think of other examples in your life that I hadn't come up with. Illustrations. Think about the principle. What we do in our own life. And are we violating this principle about becoming a partaker in other people's evil deeds? One passage I'll read and then we'll consider the lesson over is Romans 1, verse 32. This is another way that we can bid somebody Godspeed, become a partaker in somebody else's evil deeds, and that's in having pleasure in somebody else's sin. The Bible says there in Romans 1:32, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only who do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Even if we don't commit the sin, if we have pleasure in those who are sinning, then we become guilty. We become a partaker in their evil deeds. At this time, we'll sing the song.